And welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to yet another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting from New Zealand, live from the future. Joining me today is a very, very remarkable guest coming at us, I think, from Japan. His name's Benjamin Fulford. Some of you may have known him as a former contributor to Forbes magazine. Ben, welcome to the program.
Oh, hi. It's good to be on.
It's been quite a few years. In fact, it's not since the tsunami and Fukushima disaster that we've spoken last. I presume a lot has happened since then.
Well, yes, you can tell. I mean, the world is changing in ways that are no longer deniable. Just last week, you had England, Germany, Italy, and France, together with Australia, break with the United States and agree to join the Asian Infrastructure Investment Bank, which means that the post-war U.S.-led financial order is over. I mean, that's the G7 is now down to G3. That's Japan, U.S., and Canada. And I don't think Japan's going to be on there much longer either. So we're witnessing the end of the post-World War II order and the beginning of something new. Very different from what we've had in the past.
Well, exactly how different is it going to be? I mean, geopolitically, what is anything changing? Because most of the people I speak to simply say that it's just getting worse.
Well, it's getting worse for the West because they have a financial leadership that is criminal and they're stealing from everybody. I mean, the banks now, for example, trade, I think, more than 1,000 times foreign exchange per day than there is in the underlying economy. And the stock markets are also, you know, dysfunctional, parasitical things now. They're not reflecting real market forces anymore. And so what they're doing basically is these financial oligarchs are stealing from the average person in the West in order to keep themselves from going bankrupt. But They're still gonna go bankrupt. I mean, it's mathematically certain, and it's happening. And until that happens, it's, you know, everything is gonna get worse for the average person. But when it's over, it'll be suddenly like what happened in Russia after Putin came in and kicked out the oligarchs. The average Russian's living standard doubled within a year. So, if, for example, the American people were given back the money that was stolen from them by the central bank fraud, I think there'd be about enough for at least $400,000 for every man, woman, and child in the U.S. That's what's possible once these people are removed. And they are being removed.
I saw a picture on Facebook saying that the newest fighter plane the U.S. has been working on, they sunk like $40 billion into it or something. And it was the equivalent of buying every homeless person in America a $1.4 million mansion.
Yeah, I believe that's the sort of number you can come up with. And furthermore, that airplane is a turkey by all reports, you know. One of the worst reviewed U.S. airplanes in a very long time. According to experts, I mean. But, you know, this is just... And the other thing is that this huge army has not been serving the American people at all. It's been working for international corporations whose interests lie mostly outside the United States.
Well, when it comes down to this, of course, you were talking some time ago about the White Hat Society or something of that nature, that there was this kind of secret society sort of war going on. Is that still happening, or...?
Yeah, I mean, it's happening. It's the White Dragon Society and then the White Hats and all sorts of groups now working to remove these people. And basically what we're dealing with is an ethnic mafia. They're, you know, I call them Khazarians. They originate in what the nation that was called Khazaria. And they're a very high-level crime syndicate, and what they've done is they've murdered billionaires over the years and taken over their fortunes. They've taken over the control of the central banks, and they have been very, very, vicious and not very competent, you know, in running the planet. And they're being removed from power. And that's why, and these people are desperately trying to start World War III to get themselves out of the fix they're in, but it's not going to happen. And I think their regime of control is now Washington, D.C., New York, Israel, Saudi Arabia. I think that's it now. They unfortunately, you know, much to my shame, Canada. But they're really at the end of their rope, and there's going to be a very serious reckoning. You know, because the people in the U.S. military and the agencies are furious. They're baying for blood. I'm of a group that's saying no. We've got to, you know, realize these people were like a beautiful woman with syphilis, you know, and you cure the syphilis and you leave the beautiful woman, you know. And just, in other words, a few highly ranked, very vicious mob leaders will have to be removed, but you don't go after an entire ethnic group because they fell under the leadership of criminals. That's, you know, the standard.
That's one of the contexts I find very interesting about the emerging truth movement, is that this is very anti-Jewish, almost neo-Nazi type element coming out, who think that all Jews are to blame, not just the elite criminals.
Yeah, it's not, okay, I understand, but this is not a Jewish thing, okay? Let's get that clear. What we're talking about is a group, okay, they're linguistically, they speak a Germanic language, okay? Hebrew is not a Semitic language. It's not the language spoken by the nation of Judea that existed 3,500 years ago, okay? It's a Germanic language. The only people in the ancient Middle East who spoke an Indo-European language were people called the Hyksos. And they know this from 30,000 tablets they found at an old abandoned fortress in Turkey and from Egyptian writings. And the Egyptians said they worshipped a goat-faced god with a forked tail. In other words, what we call Satan. Okay? The Jews worship Yahweh, and they're very honorable people. You must not mix them up. You know, there's basically, think of it like this. There's 16 million Jews, and hiding in their ranks are these Khazarians, who also pretend to be Muslims and Christians and other things. And it's not the Jewish thing. I need to make that important point very clear. I have Jewish ancestry myself, and you know, they were all very honorable people.
Yeah. I can completely agree with that. My former producer was Jewish and a wonderful man. He taught me everything I know.
You know, so that is an important point that does need to be made. I mean, I think the military and the agency types understand that, and they know that it's not a Jewish problem. Rather, it's a large crime syndicate. And as I repeat, a lot of them pretend to be Christian or Muslim, but they're not. For example, the Saudi royals are not Muslim, and although they pretend to be. And same with the Bush family. They pretend to be Christian, but they don't. They worship Satan, okay? This is the sort of thing they've been doing. But now, because of the internet and because of their own incompetence, they've been exposed. And it's going to be a very, very liberating thing for our planet. Because you imagine, you know, you've been ruled by gangsters, and now suddenly you're going to be ruled by decent people who are, you know, are trying to do the best for the average man, you know? And competent people, I should say, too. Not people got in there because they're part of the mob, but they got there because they were good at their job.
Do you feel that there's a propensity for people to sort of assume or carte blanche things in order to make them easier to understand?
Well, sometimes you have to do that. I mean, you know, you got to sometimes look at forests and not trees if you want to understand the big picture. And, of course, that means blurring some things out at the edges. But, you know, in its fundamental base, I think the analysis is valid, you know. I mean, look at the U.S. Defense Agency, the Pentagon. They're now run by a guy called Ashton Carter, who has a PhD in theoretical physics. And he's a really smart guy who got as high as he could go through sheer talent in the old system before he hit a glass ceiling because he wasn't part of the mob. And instead, his predecessor, Chuck Hagel, I don't know if you ever watched the man speak in public, but clearly he was not the sort of person who should be at the top of an organization like that. Now we have some smart people at the top, and they're doing the right thing, and I think something big is coming down. I'm not sure what, but I have a feeling we're headed for something historical. Now, I don't like to use dates because many dates have come and gone and nothing's happened, but when I went to Italy to interview people at the P2 Freemason Lodge, these are the people who are above the Vatican. And by the way, they're not Christian. Their beliefs would be more like Zoroastrian. But they told me, and you know, I'm passing on what they told me, that they planned historical events based on the movements of celestial objects, right? And they did social engineering, and they used the planets as their guidestones. If that's the case, well, this Friday we have a solar eclipse, a supermoon, and a spring equinox, which for these occult people are all significant. And three coming together is exactly the sort of day they choose to do something big, okay? I'm not saying it's going to happen. I'm just saying it's a probability there that you cannot, you know, that we need to keep an eye on.
I interviewed a guy who was an astrologer to the stars kind of thing, and he said that the elite have a massive interest in astrology and basically always have. And the poorer people think that it's all nonsense and what have you, but the elites actually hold a lot of stock in it.
Yeah, you know, when I was a market reporter, right, I noticed a lot of these traders put charts of the moon on their trading strategies, you know. And I said, why is that? And they said, well, some people believe the full moon affects markets. And because they do, we also do, go along with it, and it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. And so, you know, whether or not the stars affect us or not, the fact that very high-level elite think they do makes it happen. See what I mean? It could be just psychological, but it still has the effect. Just like you'll notice, I'm sorry, I'm not an expert on Jewish things, but I think there's something called Shemitah or something that every time we have a huge market drop, it happens to come in this Jewish festival day when apparently they're supposed to clear their accounts. So, again, it's a sort of self-fulfilling prophecy.
Almost like being caught in your own web that you've woven.
Well, there was a famous story about a mathematician who predicted the date of his death. And when that date came, he was so scared, he committed suicide.
So good on you, son. Calculate your way out of that one.
But the other thing, of course, is that if you go to our most ancient knowledge, you know, what people really did need to look at the sky. I mean, they lived with the you know, they woke with the sun and they slept with the dark. And so tracking the planets is our oldest form of science. So it has very deep roots. You know, and people at the very highest levels of society are brought up in this tradition, and so, you know, it does affect us. I mean, I've had to start paying attention to the sky since, you know, starting reporting on these people, because it clearly does matter.
Well, I heard a analogy one time that it's kind of like a suicide bomber. Now, you may not believe in the same things that suicide bomber believes. Not that I believe that terrorism is a real threat. This is just an example. But regardless of what you believe, that person's belief is going to drive them to blow themselves up and kill you. So other people's beliefs can affect you, even if you don't share them.
Exactly. But in any case, you know, leaving aside all that occult stuff, I mean, the fact of the matter is that we have a planetary crisis that we need to solve, and that means making a collective decision at the highest leadership level and the average level to do something about it. And what I've heard is that there are proposals, you know, for a major campaign like the Marshall Plan, but the Marshall Plan was limited to a few countries. This would be for the entire planet, like a huge campaign to end poverty, stop environmental destruction, and really, you know, fix up this planet. And I understand there's a high level consensus that this needs to be done, and I'm hoping that's what's going to start soon.
Well, we should all be hoping for that. I just always fear that when people are given good news or are expecting something good to happen, they, instead of hosing in like they should in the right time frame, they sit back and they relax and hope that other people are going to handle it. And I think that this is probably the direct opposite, actually. If people are putting themselves in the line and something good's coming down the pipe, that's your time to act. That's your time to contribute.
Exactly. And I do think that this time there are people who are actually actively contributing at a high level. I mean, I know it, in fact. I talked to a lot of these people. And my understanding is, again, the last holdouts are the people in New York and Washington, D.C., except not the Pentagon and not the agencies. They are now split from the political side of the Washington establishment, from my understanding. And then, of course, we have that known war criminal Netanyahu and his people in Israel, and then we have that horrific regime in Saudi Arabia. Now, their money has been frozen, according to people who phoned me and appeared to be very knowledgeable about such things. Of course, right now, these people are terrified and fear retribution. So the important thing now is to say, no, there's going to be forgiveness, so please don't do anything, dangerous or destructive. It's like a hostage situation in some ways, and we need to get these people to, release the hostages and be assured that they're not going to be killed or anything,
Is this a similar thing that happened in South Africa, where the South African whites who implemented apartheid were very afraid of reprisals, and Nelson Mandela and the ANC, in order to get their freedom or get their political representation, promised profusely that there would be no reprisals, that there would be no consequences, and then everybody allegedly started to live their life in peace, despite the fact that the country is now extremely corrupt.
Well, but hopefully in this case we're not, we're talking about a non-corrupt regime. The original rules of governance and doing the greatest good for the greatest number that made the West strong. And the work ethic. It's like that. We need to get these people to step aside, and in order to do that, since they have nuclear blackmail at their disposal, we need to assure them that. This is not about revenge. It's about, fixing the planet and building a better future for everybody, including, non-human living beings.
Well, the question is, do they care?
Of course they do. I mean, they have no choice. They except that, some of them are religious fanatics who really, really think that it's their destiny to man-make biblical prophecy into reality, and that it's inevitable, and they're fanatics, but it's not going to happen. Okay, they haven't been able to do it despite trying for so long and so hard. They're not going to start their false Armageddon. The militaries of China, Russia, everywhere else are not going to be fooled into a nuclear war. It's just not going to happen. These people need to wake up from their brainwashed delusion and understand that the future is something we all have to decide together now. It's not based on some ancient book. We have to all, as a human species, collectively decide what sort of planet we want, what sort of future we want to build, and then make it happen.
Okay, I understand that you have to go. So feel free to just hang on up there, Ben. I want to thank you very much for popping into the show at such short notice. I really appreciate it, man.
No problem. You have a nice day.
You too, brother. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, Benjamin Fulford. You can go and check out and Google him. And if you'd like to check out Benjamin Fulford, Vinnie Eastwood, and check out the last interview that I did with him all those years ago when the Fukushima earthquake happened, Ben was the I was the first person Ben called, and he came on my show right away. So that was really wonderful. Now, in terms of the elite and the whole global context of trying to control humanity, etc., and Ben's assertions that there are ways of resolving this situation, power playing, etc., I was just wondering who would World War III be against? I mean, really, is it that easy to make everybody just go, hey, these guys are the bad guys now? I'd say that it might be, you know? Think about it. Think about how dumbed down we've all become. And if you don't think you've been dumbed down, then you're probably a lot more dumbed down than you thought. It's kind of like looking at a situation and then making up a conclusion based upon one look at it, right? Operating under incomplete information. This is what a lot of us do, and it's kind of like a survival mechanism to a large degree. And it's simply out of the fact that there's just too much information out there. It's very difficult to nail things down. However, that doesn't mean we shouldn't try to. That shouldn't mean that we don't have any inclination to find out facts and truth that is verifiable, that is understandable. Because let's think about this. We're talking about the future of humanity. We're talking about the possibility of a third world war. The second world war was horrific. But dig this. More bombs got dropped on North Vietnam during the opening days of Operation Rolling Thunder than the entirety of World War II combined. The longer humanity progresses, the more destructive our wars become. And now that the media has become controlled, unlike during the Vietnam War, where people really did get to see unfiltered, horrific images of children burned and young men executed in the street by US soldiers. Because we don't have those kind of news outlets anymore, they've all since been co-opted, what war really is doesn't strike people as familiar. Sometimes you're not afraid of the things you ought to be very, very concerned about. And that's just because we don't know. Do we? How many of us have been to war? How many have seen our friends killed beside us? How many of us have been shot and gone through that long recovery to try and heal yourself after a single tiny little bullet passes through your body? Not a whole lot of us. And I think that puts us at a great disadvantage as a human race. I've seen a lot of soldiers, talk to them, and very few of them, if any, want to go back, want to see it happen in their own backyard, want it to happen at all. Now, if you're going to be listening to soldiers like that, I think that's probably a wise move, because they know what it's like. They've been there, they've done that. But instead of listening to them, the government has no interest in protecting them or protecting their countries. It's all about the money. Who's selling them the weapons? Who's doing all this, that, and the other? I saw an article today that, I love reading headlines. There was some article saying that there was a bunch of ammo that was dropped by the US military specifically for ISIS. You know, it's like, oh my God, our enemies are out of ammo? They can't shoot back at us anymore? Let's drop them some more, son. That sound really insane? Well, yeah, that's because insane people are in charge of the freaking game. Insane people in charge of the military, insane people in charge of these little CIA-sponsored terror cells that they're going around and scare everybody. Boogeyman, boogeyman, boogeyman. They're trying to make everybody abandon their reason in favor of spending large quantities of money to kill people, innocent people, people who have done nothing wrong, people who have Nothing. Bomb their houses out if they've got them. And if they don't have a house, they've got a tent. We'll bomb that too. Bomb it with a $10 million aircraft and a $15,000 bomb to bomb a $10 tent with a guy that's got a $1,000 AK-47. That's modern warfare, baby. Doesn't it sound insane? Yeah. I can't even get over how many times I have to explain this to people. The reason why things don't make any sense is because you're a sane person. If you're completely crazy, sociopathic, scumbaggery, you know, that kind of thing, this would not be uncomfortable to you. This would not be incomprehensible to you. This would just be like, oh yeah, that's what I do. It's about right, isn't it? So how exactly can we live in a world that is dominated by criminal sociopathic scumbags and be okay with it? And the answer is obviously we can't be okay with it. There is nothing to be okay with. This is a form of rejection, this radio show. This is a form of resistance, this radio show. If you reject the things that you don't want, if you resist the things that you don't want, you're fulfilling a higher purpose. And it's not like I'm sitting here going, oh, this is what I want. Blah, blah, blah. I don't really want to be doing this. To be honest, it would be really nice to be able to have a nice job, be comfortable, and earn plenty of money, and just have fun with life. Unfortunately, though, you get called into a higher purpose sometimes, and you don't feel like you have much of a choice. And then you have to keep fighting and fighting and fighting and fighting a very, very long war. And it's only by surviving it that you become victorious. That's how hard this is. To sit here and listen to the people who've gone through a lot of persecution. To listen to fathers who've had their children taken into child trafficking rings. It's horrific stuff. And it's incredibly difficult for me to deal with just as an ordinary human being. And I don't know exactly how this is affecting you, the audience. Is this stuff driving you nuts? Or are my terrible jokes enough to fend off that kind of feeling? I don't know. I honestly don't know, but I just feel better doing something rather than doing nothing. It's too difficult for me to think about abandoning humanity. To think about standing on the sidelines, watching the world burn, and poking fun at the people who are trying to put the fires out, who are trying to save human life. There are many people with that point of view. People who tell you not to resist. Who tell you you don't know anything. Who tell you you're not going to accomplish anything. And they're usually people who don't know anything and haven't ever accomplished a single effing thing. People get upset at me because I swear, you know. If you're over 18, you should be able to deal with it like an adult, is my opinion. On the other hand, children are being kidnapped, raped, tortured, and sacrificed for their blood. And the thing that you're really concerned about is people's coarse language. What are you, the FCC? You're going to be freaking kidding me. It's beyond a joke, isn't it? Where are people's priorities? Right out the window. And that's what I'm talking about when I talk about people making decisions based upon incomplete information. If you don't have the whole picture, the whole context, that kind of thing. As Mr. Fulford said, sometimes stop looking at the trees and start looking at the forest and see the big picture. This world belongs to us. We were born here. We have a right to it. However, rights only exist because people fought and died for them, and they only persist because people die defending them. I don't want to die. I don't want to feel pain or suffering or any of those terrible things. But nor can I stand by while other people do it in my stead and do nothing to help them. Maybe I've come across a strange justification. That I can sit back and not fight on the front lines and just give people a platform by which to speak their voice. Some people would just sit back and go, oh, well, that sounds relatively nice. But I'm wondering whether or not it's justifiable anymore. Whether being able to have a home and solid internet is something I'm asking too much for. Because I need these things in order to do my work, as I do all the time. But there are other people who are doing such an incredible job exposing scumbaggery who don't have any of this. Who actually would prefer my help because they don't have the resources to help themselves. And it's sort of a symbiotic relationship there. Like with donations for the show, for example. I can't sit back and not help the activists. And they don't have the skills. They don't have the technology with which to put their stories out by themselves. So I do that for them. Can they pay me? No, they can't. That's why I ask for donations. That's why I serve the activists for free. Because not only can they not afford to have somebody to help them, but they don't even have the time, even if they had the technology and the training, because they have to make sure that whatever area of scumbaggery they're exposing continues to be exposed, so they can keep up the good fight. And I realize everybody's broke. I'm just starting to realize this now, hearing it from everybody, in every sector of society. Doesn't matter whether you're in the United States, United Kingdom, or New Zealand, or anything. Most people are just broke. Particularly people like us who've been totally disillusioned with the workforce to a large degree. Who quit the jobs and pursue entrepreneurial talents and things like that. And try to make something of themselves for this world. That will cost you your income. It's a sad, sad state of affairs. And that's why I appreciate it so much and are totally blown away when people give money to this show. Because that's exactly the part that some people can play. Some people have money, some people have talent, and some people have resources. And the people who have a social responsibility to help their fellow man, to pick them up when they fall, have a compulsion to do so. They're not being told to. They're not being obligated or forced to. They choose to help. Why? Because they appreciate it. That's the general feeling and messages that I get. Here's a little bit of coin. Thank you very much. I appreciate your work. That's all that's required. It's a pretty interesting way to contribute, isn't it? You can sit back and you can listen, and if you like it, you give something. You never have to pay to listen to a single minute. And nor would I try to charge people for it. Because this is free information, it's free to everybody, and the whole idea is to make people free, and freely people give of themselves to thank me for it. Can't stress how much I appreciate that, ladies and gentlemen. So if you go to thevinnyeastwoodshow.com and start up a $5 a month donation today, that means that little contribution that you make winds up going into the pool of all the different people that have been supporting me over the years. And that always adds up, usually at the end of the week, just before rent's due, as just enough money to keep going. I'm not planning on becoming a billionaire or anything of that nature. I simply plan to keep working perpetually until the job is done. When the job is done, and I don't know exactly what kind of a yardstick one can define as that, when is the war going to be over, ladies and gentlemen? If we're up against scumbaggery, ruthless criminal sociopaths, when do they lay down their arms? When is the fight over? When can you sit back and relax and take your war gauntlets off? I don't know is the answer. It's a perpetual, eternal thing, as far as I'm concerned. It may get overturned within the next couple of years, next couple of decades, or it may never be. We might lose this fight. We might live to see a day where 90% of the population has been exterminated, where the remaining people have been literally enslaved. Microchip population. Androids, the whole sci-fi dystopia thing. We might live to see that day. If you look at it in an analogistic way, we already live in a sci-fi dystopia at the moment, don't we? It's like Idiocracy in slow motion. Everybody's getting dumber. We're all flooded with pathetic crap. Products that break in a day. The food's poison. The water's toxic. The air is polluted. My God. There's something like 200 chemicals that you can get off a child who's just been born. Traces of 200 toxic chemicals. Isn't that unbelievable? We're bathing in it. All day. Every day. And there's seemingly no end to it. The disgusting parasitical nature of the New World Order seems to infect us, make us become one of them, make us forget why we fight, why we're alive, make us forget everything of value, our families, our friends, our countries, our economies, our businesses, all swept away in the name of vain entertainment. Even when one doesn't even watch the vain entertainment anymore, you can see the residual effect it has on the people around you. Doesn't it? Are people so foolish as to think that they've achieved the pinnacle of their existence? Having dinner with their family and never looking up from their smartphone once to ask them how their day went? I've been badgered a lot lately over my computer problems, saying that I don't know nothing about computers. And I don't want to, you know, offend computer geeks and nerds and things of that nature. I think it's actually a positive term, because everybody needs a geek or a nerd or something like that at some point in their life, because they have technical knowledge. And they've usually worked quite hard in order to develop that technical knowledge. And so, you know, it's valued input. However, there's a flip side to that. And just like there's a flip side to any other kind of wisdom or knowledge, you can become too full of yourself. Become arrogant. And basically be rude. You ever notice that? How some people who bury their head in technology and only care about the technology forget entirely about the human component. Usability, simplicity, that kind of thing. And what's been happening to me recently is I've been criticized for getting a computer, a new computer, to create my videos on. And a whole bunch of people who are real experts in PCs and know nothing about the Mac are getting angry with me and insulting me and saying how little I know about computers and such and blah, blah, blah. And maybe they don't understand that I use a computer really for two specific reasons, for editing audio and editing video. Now, if you use your computer only for gaming and Facebooking and insulting people on Facebook that actually do something for a living to help humanity, I think you got your priorities a little messed up, bro. I think you're getting too full of yourself. I mean, I've made 3,000 videos. I'm sick of people who do nothing on a PC telling me how little I can do with a Mac. It's freaking foolish. And not to mention, the technology itself is inconsequential. The software itself, inconsequential. It doesn't matter what technology you've got. Doesn't matter what programs you're using. Are you doing something, or are you doing sweet bugger all? Most of the people who would criticize me for, you know, doing all of this, don't do anything of consequence with their lives. Don't do anything of consequence with their technology. They have brand loyalty and then claim that somebody else has brand loyalty just because they actually do something with a machine. Does that strike you as fantastically stupid? It does to me. And again, don't want to insult all the wonderful geeks and nerds out there, because let's face it, without you, we wouldn't even have any of this technology to use. And virtual computer illiterates like myself wouldn't be able to get the work done if somebody hadn't laid down the groundwork. Just saying. If somebody's got something good going, if they're actually achieving something, and you can't do any better, haven't done any better, and are never planning to do any better, do you have a right to criticize them? I'd say not. Because it makes... I mean, I've done that to people before. I said, oh, you need to do this, that, or the other. Like I'll be advising somebody who's already really fit about diet and exercise when I'm overweight. And then I just kind of stop myself and go, you know what? Sorry, bro. I don't know what I'm talking about. You know? Maybe sometimes that's what we need to do. Stop ourselves and just go, hold on, I don't know what I'm talking about. And then just laugh it off. Because once you realize that you don't know what you're on about, that's when you can start learning something for a change and stop being a know-it-all twat. You know, seems pretty straightforward to me. I would have thought that was quite reasonable. But when you take things out of context, of course, it becomes all about this ego thing. And I saw this interesting video today. The opening line of which was very, very ironic. Welcome to Lesbian Knows Best, and today our show is about the male ego. Now, okay, Lesbian Knows Best. Now, does that not strike you as fantastically egotistical? You know, I like other girls, therefore I know best. That's kind of the thing that I got out of that. And then the person who she's interviewing is this totally, totally up himself, complete, utter douchebag who frightens women off because he's such a douchebag. And then uses him as an example of what's wrong with all men. Talk about taking it out of context and throwing the baby out of the bathwater and starting off on a fatigue of hypocrisy. It's excruciating to see how people operate. They don't push the logic. There's this great movie that I saw, and at the end of the film, he's trying to get enough money to get out of Vegas. And for one night only, Lady Luck was with him. Sat down at a table and earned himself $250,000. And then he's like, okay, I've got exactly enough. I'm getting out of here. But then he goes back to the table because he thinks the Lady Luck's still with him and he loses everything. And he said, look, you know what my problem was? Is I never thought I'd be in this position. So I didn't push the logic on it. And sometimes that's what we need to do. We need to push the logic. If we're planning on doing something, if we're planning on criticizing somebody, just take the logic a little step further before you lash out. Now, one thing that's been kind of irking me lately is this whole general of disrespect online. It reminds me of The Godfather. What have I ever done to have you treat me with such disrespect? Everybody else has noticed this, haven't they? Anybody who uses Facebook, anybody who uses YouTube, will see in the comments sections just these cascades a lot of the time of freaking abuse for freaking idiots who literally don't have a life It's just narcissistic, egotistical, sadistic, psychopathic type of behavior. I don't tolerate that stuff, man. It's just block and the scum is gone. But the problem is there's billions of people on the planet who are douchebags with computers. So you can't really block them all. It's not like freaking Pokemon. You can't catch them all. And so you kind of have to sit here. And this is the thing I've started noticing a bit lately, and I don't like it how people, think that, my fame means anything, my reputation means anything. It doesn't. The only thing that means anything is who I am right now in this moment. If I'm famous, so what? Have I become a douchebag? That matters. You see what I'm saying? And a lot of people who become famous put up these walls to protect themselves from other people, from other, what we call unwanted or undue influence. Now, I'm approaching the point where I'm starting to get tired of it. Really. Tired of getting emails insulting me from listeners and that kind of thing. It's all part of the parcel, isn't it? You kind of just have to deal with it. You can't carte blanche say, I'm never going to communicate with my audience again. You can't just say, all of you are idiots, or get like too egotistical about it. Because your fame doesn't matter, and it's fleeting, and you can lose it in a second, the second you stop respecting your audience for who they are as people. A lot of people don't even care. Like, they really don't care. They actually have no conscience, no empathy, and they jump on the radio and they just spin BS and try to hurt people and attack others on their broadcast and use it more or less as a portable weapons platform, like some kind of a propaganda tank machine. There's something wrong with that. Why do people do it? It's not cool. You're misusing an incredible gift. Being able to have a talk radio show in and of itself is an incredible gift. And usually somebody has to give one to you in order for it to get anywhere. You could be podcasting on your own, and that's how a lot of people start. But getting to the top of a heap is so much easier when you've got other people in your group, when you're climbing that mountain together. And that's why you got to appreciate all the people that work with you. And that's why you got to make sure that no people work for you. Like you're sitting there with some kind of air of authority and being able to dominate others just because of your position. That's taking advantage. That's becoming the enemy. That's not something that is wholesome or useful. Sometimes people are, shall we say, non-compliant. They actually do need to be fired. They actually do need to be disciplined because they take their baggage into other people's situations, onto networks, onto websites, onto the social media. And sometimes the best response to these people is just to say nothing, to completely ignore them, because ultimately they're saying something specifically because they're sadistic and they want to hurt your feelings. And if your feelings are hurt and they find out, then it only encourages them to keep doing it. That's why replying to these people is a bad idea, because you're replying out of pain. Somebody questions your credibility or says that you're dishonest or a disinfo agent or something of that nature, and you want to get into an argument with this person who's obviously a lying, psychopathic, sadistic scumbag? Where's your priorities, bro? Block and the scum is gone. Block and the scum is gone. Block and the scum is gone. Keep these people, these toxic trash, out of your life. that allows those people who aren't there specifically to insult you, who aren't there specifically to hurt you, who are there to help you, who are there to give you guest suggestions, who are there to send you articles and videos and to help you, that allows them to get through. And you don't allow a couple of idiots ruin it for everybody. Imagine if it's kind of like drug policy. Some idiot takes like 4 ecstasy tablets and then dies. Good riddance, I guess. You know, one less idiot. Too bad. People die all the time for horrific things. And the problem with society nowadays is that there's no natural selection anymore. And you know that true? I know this sounds harsh, but there's no natural selection anymore. The slow, the weak, the foolish, the easily manipulated, or anything like that. There's no tigers waiting in the bushes to tear out their throat when they're not looking. They survive. And they breed. And they multiply. And they make matters worse. Imagine if the Spartans had done something along those lines. If they hadn't cast out all the deformed and misshapen children before they got to grow up. Not that I'm recommending we do that, of course. What I'm saying is that sometimes a society has to take responsibility for making sure that those people who aren't going to positively contribute to society in any way, who literally cannot, who have chosen to walk the path of evil, we need to find a way to disarm them, to stop them doing harm to others. You don't need to kill them. You don't need to attack them. You don't need to even fight them. You just need to ignore them, block them, and watch them all fade away. They disappear, for the largest part. It's an effort to try and hurt somebody. It's an effort to try and attack somebody. It's actually quite easy to help people. I know, because helping people for me is a daily job. You talk to somebody who everybody calls a crazy person when they're not, who has plenty of facts and evidence, and you let them relay the facts and evidence. It makes them feel better. You actually help them. They become a better person and a better member of society as a result of you actually caring about them. That's what I'm talking about. We need to care about each other. Truly care. Give something of ourselves. If you're not willing to devote your entire life, as people like me are, if you've... I don't even have a backup plan. So if this goes south, you know, I'm in trouble, son. If you're not willing to do that, then there are many, many other ways you can contribute. I was at a party one time. A listener invited me. It was his birthday party, so we sang our happy birthday song for him. And met a couple of my listeners there, you know, coincidentally enough. And they were talking about how, I'm doing so little, Vinny, and you're doing so much. And I'm just going, well, hold on a second. You're actually probably doing quite a lot. Do you have kids? Yeah. Are you raising them on GMO food? No, that's good. Are you giving them organics? Yeah. Are you keeping the fluoride out of their water? Yeah. Are you loving them? Yeah. Are you caring about them? Yeah. Are you supporting them? Yeah. Well, then you're going to create some really wonderful kids. And that is a very important job. I'm not saying, you know, it's more important than being on the radio. It doesn't matter. Everybody's trying to put things into freaking hierarchies. I'm sick of that, man. It all has to go up somewhere, you know. There's always going to be some kind of a leader. I don't care about that kind of thing. Everybody can contribute in their own way. Occasionally, people with organization skills are absolutely necessary in order to organize and help others go about their business and help them contribute, right? But ultimately, it's when you start valuing some douchebag with a microphone like me over your own contributions to humanity. I just think that's wrong, man. I just think that's really wrong. You're an individual, and you are powerful, and you are creative, and you have the capacity to make really effective change in millions of different ways every single day. The only thing I can ever really criticize somebody about is if they don't do anything. If they literally don't do anything to help society. We don't have time for that. We really don't. As a species, we do not have time for that kind of nonsense. We've been trained for a long time to sit back and take it. Can't fight City Hall, we can't do this. I had Penny Bright on the show yesterday, and she literally is taking on City Hall and winning. The scum tried to sell her house out from under a freehold home to pay a couple of $1,000s worth of unpaid rates that she's disputing to pay in a proper way with documents filed and everything. And then she beats them in court. All right. It's the problem when you're up against people with unlimited resources is that they think that their unlimited resources will win. Mm-mm-mm. Sometimes it's one person with virtually no resources who simply knows that they're right will make the difference. We'll get victory. We'll challenge the status quo. And if you can't challenge the status quo, maybe you should be challenging yourself. Maybe you should be questioning your position in all of this. You see, I'm friends with a lot of people who are damaged. I'm damaged. I've had fights with these people. You know, yelling, screaming over the phone type fights. And that's because we've all been victims of the system at some point. And we've got like this sort of, I guess for lack of a better term, some form of complex post-traumatic stress syndrome. And how that works is it kind of removes some of the brakes. You know, when somebody says something that angers you or whatever, and you're kind of like, what an idiot. That gets changed to, what an idiot! You know, like your cool factor, your coolant systems and your mind stop working properly. And you lose your temper, you rage out at people. And this can be really disconcerting. Like if you do this to your friends and you blow up at them or whatever, they're like, what the hell is going on here? But if you're traumatized too, then you kind of understand and you're like, okay, well, he desperately needs a freaking hug. And I need to apologize for what I did and make amends and stuff and try to bring it back down. And then you'll find out that these people aren't like crazy and off the thing, or they're just damaged. All right. Parts of them that have to deal with stress don't work properly. And sometimes you just need to compensate on their behalf to help them through it. And I don't know if there's many people in this movement who are completely undamaged, who are socially unscarred, as it were. If anything, I would say that's almost a prerequisite of the job. Having pain, having suffering, having been screwed over by the establishment makes you the perfect weapon. Because you know what you're fighting against. It's only a person who truly understands their enemy that can really, really have a chance of victory against them. And when it comes down to whether or not you're going to choose to rage out at somebody or to stop caring about your friends, that's when you're kind of ticking over the little box for your soul. Am I a human being? Do I have a heart? Do I have a conscience? What do I do? And I think that what we want to do is try and take a break at this point. I can't hear them, though, so what we'll do is we'll just transfer through to the end of this segment, and then we'll go to breaks there. If the producer board there could just let me know, give me a 30-second warning when the next break's coming for the people, that would be really lovely. Trying to sort of keep it together here, because you normally have like a whole bunch of breaks and you run out and you go take a wiki leak, you have some coffee or another glass of water or something like that during the breaks in order to keep yourself stable, because it's very much work. And people wonder, you know, how I can just keep going and going and ranting for minutes, hours even. You know, I could never do that. I could never do that. And, well, you know, some people have been born with this terrible curse of being full of themselves, and some people haven't, you know. Just be thankful that it's not you, son. Will you be here on this microphone? I dare you. I do think, you know, taking yourself too seriously is a big problem in the truth movement, bro. Oh, my God. I've been trying. I've been really, really trying, bro, these last couple of weeks, just to kind of go like, am I taking myself too seriously? Am I taking myself too seriously? Like, really concerned about it, really thinking about it, absolutely trying desperately to find evidence that I'm actually just being a douchebag and I'm not actually helping anybody. Fortunately, I haven't found the evidence for that to be encapsulated as yet. So I'm just going to keep on doing what I know how to do. Speaking of which, editing. This is a long, long process. People don't understand, okay, the work that goes in to editing. If you're a consumer, you don't know what the producer goes through. Just in general, unless you've been on the other side. I mean, you've driven a car before, right? Have you designed and built a car before? See, that's what I'm talking about. That's the difference between watching a video and knowing how to edit one. There's a lot more complexity that goes into it. It's not just seats and a steering wheel. And when it comes down to it, trying to tell people that they're doing bad editing or anything like that, what's interesting is that a consumer will know what's wrong with a car when they're driving it. But the person who manufactured it, it's out of their hands. They don't know if there's something wrong with the car. They never got to drive it. So when you're putting out a video and people complain about your editing, you can't just sit back and say, oh, well, you try and edit it then. You know, I suppose you can. And maybe that's a good thing, because there should be a lot more editors out there. Should be a lot of people doing YouTube channels and putting up their radio shows. By all means, the whole truth movement ain't covered yet. There's still serious business to be conducted. When it is your turn, when you have that compulsion to just go, hey, you know what, I'm going to stop doing what I'm doing, and I'm just going to learn how to do this instead, because it'll make me feel better, and I want to contribute something to the truth movement. I want to contribute something to humanity. Man, seeing people go through that is freaking awesome. It really is. It's actually quite empowering for people like me to truly see what people are getting up to. To see that people are in fact truly awakening. That they're beginning to contribute to the broader brushstrokes of humanity. That they're actually becoming part of the zeitgeist. The whole general mass of thoughts and wisdom that are circulating out there doesn't find everyone, because not everybody's looking for them. And I applaud those people who post 9/11 truth videos and things all over, music videos by Britney Spears, etc., and take all the abuse from the trolls that are on there. I applaud those people. There's so much work to do that one person cannot do it all. No, it's just not possible. I mean, I'm probably pretty multi-talented as far as the truth movement is concerned. You know, I can write, I can do videos, I can do the radio show hosting bit. But when it comes to spreading things out all over the internet, promoting broadcasts before they happen, I feel relatively limited. And that maybe it could be just my mind's way of telling me that I need to actually start getting a team together. Really need a group of people behind me that are helping to produce, record, edit, upload, promote, spread, write, etc. That would be cool. But I'm not sure how it will work. Because as anybody who's ever employed anyone knows, you don't know what their skill set is. Not yet. You've got to judge their passion, etc. But can it be done? Because I've seen this happen in truth movement organizations all over the world, from radio networks to YouTube teams and things like that. People just burn out. They sometimes don't have much of a fun time. Okay, I think I've got James Wright from the 33rd Degree of Freemasonry messaging me now. So I'll see if I can bring him into the broadcast, ladies and gentlemen. He's gone through a hell of a lot, and he's doing a lot of work down in Hollywood right now, trying to expose Freemason scumbaggery. James, are you there, mate?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Loud and clear.
Cool. What's going on?
Well, I've just been ranting about people contributing to the truth movement in their own way, and what have you, more or less just meandering until you've arrived, sir. And now you have.
Oh, yes, I was stuck on the 101 Hollywood freeway in gridlock.
World's largest parking lot.
Yes, yes. But the most exhilarating one, so.
Did you ever see that movie, Falling Down, where the guy just, like, bugger it, and he just gets out of his car and just leaves it in traffic and just walks off?
No, but there's a scene in the series Entourage where they do that right in the middle of Hollywood. It's pretty funny.
It's traffic's a real bad thing, which is why I hope that Andrew Bishago, the time traveling teleportation guy, you know what I'm talking about, actually gets his wish one day that we have teleportation in common usage. No more cars, no more getting stuck in traffic, no more waiting about like 4 hours to get from A to B to go see a loved one. Just roof, and you're there. Man, humanity would speed up catastrophically fast.
Yeah, you know, but I'm old school, so I like the aspect of driving, because I was a, you know, illegal street racer back in my high school days and loved that culture. And I just got a new car, and of course, I don't want to say what it is on the air, because, you know, it'll be like spot James Wright, you know, turn into one of those things. But what I like most about this new car is it's new, but it's of a model and a make to where you can actually see every inch of the hood in front of you, you know, like the old cars from the 80s and everything. So I just, that's what I like. Now I know where I am in the road and how far I have and all that space between me and a potential crash, you know, so I'm quite satisfied with that. Because these new cars, you know, they drop straight down from the windshield. You have no idea where your hood begins, ends, so.
Right. Well, it's kind of like Brooklyn then. Nobody knows where the hood begins or ends.
Or L.A., yeah.
I wanted to get a little bit of background from you, because it's been a number of months since you've been on the show, and I understand that you've gone through a lot of rigmarole in Hollywood over exposing this Freemasonry stuff, and you've had bookstores threatened by Freemasons if they had your book in there, and a whole bunch of really scary stuff. But apparently it's working out quite well for you now, and you're getting really into the Hollywood culture and to studios and meeting new people, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, in the interest of telling it honestly, I think I should clarify at this point that whatever diabolical what have you was going down the previous time I lived and worked in Hollywood before I left and went to Phoenix for a while. I think that had more to do with Michael Miller, my publisher at New Falcon, than it did, say, an organized group of Los Angeles area Freemasons that time around. So, you may not know this, but it was all over KTLA and KCAL and all the mainstream news here back at Halloween. Before he's a book publisher, that's just what he does as a hobby because he inherited the label from his father. First and foremost, he's a basketball coach at LACC. And this is not the first time, it's now the second time he's gone down for a underage filming of athletes, hidden cameras type of a scandal, allegedly. I have to use that word allegedly because I'm subpoenaed. I've had to give depositions of what I know about him and his movements and things like that. And so I will be called to trial probably sometime in the fall here in downtown LA to testify against him. The good news for me in that, out of this horrible situation of like pedophilia and everything, is that it will finally be the nail in the coffin with any contracts or legal ties I had with New Falcon, who was, as you well know, grossly mismanaging my stuff. My conclusion of the whole long story short version now is that basically Michael Miller is a Mason. I did my digging. He's out of Long Beach Lodge. And I think the idea was to buy me up and shut me up with creature comforts like the Porsche I was driving and the studio loft in Hollywood I was living in and that kind of stuff. And when I wasn't compliant and I started pushing the publicity on the book myself and the radio stuff started taking off, that's when he and his goons took issue with me, and that's when the, like you said, the bookstore owner threats and everything stepped up like 1,000 notches. And so that's why I say I think that had more to do with him than the Masons this time. So as far as the Masons are concerned, I think I've become too big to threaten at this point because they've gotten used to me taking their threats and making them public and making them look like an ass every time I turn around. So that, fortunately for me, is tapered off, and fortunately for me, things do seem to be, where some wood, getting better. So that, and with the stunt that you're aware of that unfolded back around Halloween as well, with Revolution Radio and people who are such white trash, their names are not even worth mentioning. Because of that little stunt, it's almost like it had an adverse reaction, and it made the whole of Hollywood fall in love with me overnight. So I've now got people in my speed dial that are some pretty intimidating names in Los Angeles, and I feel that this time, the second go of living and working in LA, it's a whole different ballgame. I'm much better protected. I've got the security issues down to a fine art. I know the game. I've learned from the mistakes of the past. Everywhere I go, I've got good eyes on me that I have put there. I drive from a garage to garage to garage. I mean, I'm not out there. I'm doing considerably better. And Vinny, for the first time in, I don't know, since 1998. I actually am starting to feel happy and confident, which are strange emotions to come back into contact with after a decade and a half hiatus, you know?
Well, I think if anybody deserves it, you do, because it's kind of like the light at the end of the tunnel, isn't it? You've gone through the
yeah.
long, dark journey here.
Yeah, and I mean, I've been put to the test a million times with the trolls trying to say, you know, oh yeah, right, prove it, oh yeah, right, prove it. Well, any journalist I've come in face-to-face contact with, I've shown them exactly what kind of evidence I have in my possession, which is considerable. And there's just the trolls are out of material. The Masons are out of material. They're trying to copy my kind of business plan of how I present myself as a public figure with some of the younger guys that are on this. Basically, the people that have come after me in my position there on the council, they're trying to groom them for what I used to do and plus what I'm doing now and being public and being popular and everything, but they're not winning. They're botching it all up because it's a popularity contest. And so long as they're sitting there being all grumble, 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 and you know, you can be 30 years old and still act like you're 80, and the public isn't buying what they're selling. It's that simple.
Well, it's in New Zealand, it's a very old, dying kind of culture. They're actually struggling with their recruitment and that kind of thing. And
I think that's indicative of the entire Pacific Rim, because it's the same thing here.
Why specifically the Pacific Rim? I mean, is it in Europe and Eastern United States, is that different? Is it kind of like the opposite?
Europe is a whole different story with different operations manuals and traditions and things. So it still does thrive there, yeah, but not the Scottish Rite, I should clarify. The York Rite thrives there. But Freemasonry or any appendant variation thereof simply does not thrive in the West Coast. It's more of a Deep South and East Coast thing for America. And to put that into context, I think I've said this before, there are the same amount of just regular neighborhood blue lodges in the entire state of New Mexico as there are in downtown Dallas. So once you get past that kind of El Paso border westward, that's, you know, you see less and less and less of it. And yes, I've seen lodges around L.A. I mean, they're everywhere, but not the kind, and they're dark. They're what we may Masonically call a dark lodge. Maybe they open one day a month, a year, I mean.
Well, that's interesting. Okay.
I believe
we're coming to a break now. So let's go ahead and take that. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. We'll be right back. And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com 4 days a week from Tuesday to Thursday, 9 till 11 p.m. Central, 10 till 12 Eastern, and 7 till 9 Pacific time. I hope to catch you all tuning in regularly. My very special guest today is James Wright, formerly of the Supreme Council of the 33rd Degree of Freemasonry in Dallas, and he's written a number of books about the topic, which you can find, I think, can you find them on Amazon.com, or are they still holding on to your other book there, the Filthy Rituals of Freemasonry there, James?
That one was never released. You could find it on Amazon or in Barnes & Noble, but I would prefer that you didn't, because it just goes in, the money goes into the pocket of a pedophile, my publisher, who I'm separating from, and I've not seen my past 4 royalty payments. So do not make a pedophile one nickel richer. Contact me. I'll give it to you for free. Or Vinny has a link to the ebook also for free. So that ought to show my intentions.
Okay. And I always find it real funny. Oh, he's just out to make money. Yeah, bro. I'm out trying to expose the most ruthless bunch of criminal sociopaths who will mess up any possible career opportunity that I have in the future to the greatest of their abilities for the money.
Right, because it's really fun to go to the grocery store on food stamps and to count literal change to try and put gas in a car. Let me tell you how much fun that is.
It's just really stupid, and this reminds me of the moment of truth, Kim.com's moment of truth here in New Zealand, where the Prime Minister, John Key, who's a Federal Reserve trader, accused Edward Snowden and Julian Assange of only being part of this quote-unquote moment of truth by Kim.com because they were being paid. And same with the journalists and independent people who came on and were part of that panel. And one of the journalists made a very interesting point. He says that what John Key's doing is he's actually revealing his intentions here, because he wouldn't do anything unless he was getting paid for it. He accuses everybody else of doing it for the money.
Yeah, that's a classic American political tactic. You know, you accuse others of what it is you're doing.
Does it work? Oh, who knows?
It does work. The sicko FOs in my family used to do it to each other all the time. Of course it works. I don't do heroin, you do. Meanwhile, the needle's sticking out of her arm. Yeah.
Family life in Texas, you're going to love that stuff. It's a wonderful culture. Just thinking about this. Can we reveal some context of Freemasonry? Because I had a look yesterday at the episode of the Dark Occult of Mysticism show that we did with Freda, where both of you guys went through what happens at Freemasonic lodges and this this whole power play struggle that's going there, and the young guys that come in that know better than the person who thinks that he's head honcho or the lodge or whatever, and then they just be like telling you to shut up or get out or something like that. And I was looking at all these other videos about the secrets of the Brotherhood and that kind of thing, and it's like tens of thousands of hits, and I'm like, well, these people making these aren't real Freemasons.
It's all, yeah, exactly. It's all bollocks put out there on purpose to confuse and mislead and, yeah.
Well, let's run an idea past you then. If you were to try and pick out a list of bullet points about the nastiest things that Freemasonry has done or is doing, what would they be? I mean, would you have like a top 10 or a top 100?
Well, okay, yes. If we consult Webster's Dictionary, then the way that they play with the dead bodies and the rituals at the Scottish Rite would be defined as necrophilia. So I think we could do without that. I think we could go to the Stage Supply store, which like in Hollywood there's 1,000 of, and get a mannequin or a skeleton or what the hell ever. So that's easily remedied from a technical theater perspective. The endless, endless, endless by invitation only orders that just promotes and intensifies the culture of elitism that's already prevalent there. So we don't need that. What else? Important top 10. Checks and balances. There has to be some system of checks and balances between Grand Lodge officials and their constituents, as well as the Supreme Council, 33 people, and their thousands and thousands, or millions rather, of constituents. Because just because you get that, it's like a Supreme Court justice, the way it's set up right now. You get that appointment, it's yours for life. Except in Grand Lodges where they have new elections, but see, even there, it's still, in a sense, for life because it's rigged. So, hence the term checks and balances. And basically, I, with the exception of the really good, kind-hearted, wise old-timer that needs to be there for, like, Obi-Wan purposes to give guidance to the younger blood, anybody over the age of 55, I would say, needs to immediately retire from positions of power in the fraternity because that's what's killing it. It needs the young blood, it needs the new ideas, it needs people who can think outside of the box to continue that tradition and adapt it to the modern world. Because everything else, think of the adaptations we've made, you and I being 2 years apart in age. We grew up in a world where most of the houses still had one phone in the kitchen on the wall with a cord that was a mile long. TV, if you had cable, had what, 40 channels? And we've been inundated with all of these devices and advancements and everything else, but the one entity in this planet that has remained frozen in time and suspended animation is Freemasonry. They just refuse to adapt and to change, because in order to do that, that threatens who might hold what power. And that's where that ego kicks in and that sociopathic la-di-da, and here we all are. So,
well, in that context, if the leadership is a real problem inside Freemasonry, how exactly is there going to be any change in the leadership structure.
There won't. That's how I ended my first book, is I tried my damnedest. And when I say my damnedest, I mean my utmost 110% damnedest, privately, internally, in the proper channels, along in tandem with the proper Masonic laws, to get problems fixed. And my final conclusion from that whole horrible experience is it cannot be done from the inside. It's going to require the type of things that I'm doing, that Frater X is doing, and other very, very, you can count them on one hand, the brothers of this planet who are trying to do this type thing that we're doing. And it's going to take that picking up some inertia to really, really affect what's going on the inside. Because, I mean, just what they did to me as a gay man caused gay guys to go do retaliatory crimes and pelt the Supreme Council building with pink paintballs. Okay, but that's not solving anything. What are they going to? They're going to call their window washers and say, "Go scrub it off." And it's just another day and just another business day. So they didn't learn anything from that. There was no message received. So it's really going to take public, political level. I'll give you an example. Here in California, we have a wonderful system of government called the proposition system. So I could go to Sacramento tomorrow morning, and I could write up a proposition and say, henceforth, every Freemason shall be exiled from the state of California. Well, if I can get the California voters to vote on that, they'll enact it as a law. And it's going to take those type of... And now, I don't mean doing something that drastic. That's just a funny ha-ha example. But there are ways of using the democratic system here in California to start a domino effect, if you will, going eastward toward D.C. Because if California was to secede from the Scottish Rite management structure, that would be not only unprecedented, but it would set the example that, oh, yeah, we don't have to listen to anything you say because you have no grounds and no rights to say it to begin with.
Well, this would mean that basically a public awareness campaign needs to get into full swing, because I was just thinking about yesterday I was interviewing an activist here in New Zealand, Penny Bryant, and she gave a couple of examples of how one person sitting in a tree getting enough media passage actually allowed them to save that 500-year-old tree. And I made the point that if you're going to resist something, it is imperative that the mainstream media be on your side. Otherwise, without the public awareness, without that court of public opinion, it can only go so far.
Here's the problem. I liken my dilemma to the dilemma that Princess Diana faced, my cousin. Okay, and the reason I say that is because the whole time she was fighting that family, she was surrounded by people who supported her and who were sympathetic to her and wanted to help her, but were too scared to say anything with what the consequences in that British aristocracy environment they live in over there would be for them and their families. It's the same type of a situation with me and Masons that I know, because I have a tremendous amount of support from Freemasons, believe it or not, but no one, no offense to them, brothers out there listening, I don't mean this the wrong way, so please don't take it this way, but you don't have the pair to go to this mat. You know, I do, a few others do, but I understand. I would not be able to sleep at night if I knew that I cost a good Freemason his job, or caused grief for his family, or caused him to have to relocate to another state, or anything of the kind. I would, that would tear me up inside. So I don't, you know, I'm not saying, you know, I'm the whipping boy, everybody flog me, but what I am saying is that I don't mind spearheading this campaign, but yes, you're right, it's going to take more of an awareness and a call to action from a grassroots level to back them into a corner enough to where they cave. Because, believe me, I know these people well. I very well, very intimately. And it's not going to... They're the types that are, they're chicken shit when it's all said and done. They may act big and roar and, oh, look at my power, and, oh, look at my titles, and, oh, look at blah, 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 blah. That's wonderful. At the end of the day, they're cowards. All sociopaths are cowards. That's why they overcompensate in those other ways and abuse power. So...
I think that one element I'd like to say here, especially to all the other brothers out there, not that I'm one of you, of course, it takes somebody sacrificing themselves, more or less, to a large degree. I mean, I look at what you've lost. Used to have nice, fun social life, and I've been there for you for years, having to see you swap out, go from Wi-Fi hotspot to Wi-Fi hotspot, and sleep in your car, and move from one state to the other, and go on radio shows, and having people outside wearing Freemason garb, smoking cigarettes in the dark, surveilling you, and that kind of thing.
Yeah, I would trust you with my life, Vinny. You've had a front row seat for this since day one of it going public, and yeah, there's been situations. I don't know. My closest friends from childhood have all told me recently, like, it got to a point where we didn't think you were going to survive. We were getting ready to accept that your funeral was going to be coming up or something, you know, but then you shocked everyone and you persevered. And yeah, because I've slept on beaches, I've slept in abandoned, condemned houses in this whole process. I drove that Dodge I had until the engine literally fell out. But you know what? God is good, and good things have been happening this year, and I've got a new car that's absolutely stunning, better than the car I had that practically fell from the sky. So I've got a studio that's owned by very, very, very good Christian, wholesome people. We go to church together, that's helping my show pro bono. So there's bad in Hollywood, but there's also tremendous good. And the first time I lived here, I got sucked into the quicksand of the bad. But this time around, it's a whole different ballgame, and things are working out far better.
Okay. Well, unfortunately, we're going to have to go to a break now. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, at the VinnyEastwoodShow.com. Don't go anywhere. Okay, I don't know what happened there. This seems to be real problems with the network. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. It's now the final segment of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio, the Vinnie Eastwood Show. It's the lighter side of genocide. Just because we're being exterminated doesn't mean we can't make it fun. Otherwise, what's the point of being killed? And my very special guest is James Wright. Welcome back.
Thank you, Vinnie.
Okay, sorry about the network and the dead air there, ladies and gentlemen. It's partly my bad. All right. So anyway,
actually, we're having strong geomagnetic flares, so blame it on that.
Yeah, I'm not sure if Chris Geo and his magnetism had anything to do with it, but yeah, who's former host on American Freedom Radio. Inside joke, ladies and gentlemen. Inside joke. But I wanted to get into this context as well in terms of the indoctrination of Freemasonry. I mean, you went into this for years and years, and you went from point A almost to the very top. You could have become 33rd degree at some point. I'm just wondering how they kept you in line that whole time, and why so many people who are members of the Brotherhood refuse to question if there's anything wrong with it.
I can't speak for other members, but in my case, the pressure, 50% was from the Masons, the other 50% was from my family. Because you can equate it to a New York Mafia Sopranos type thing, like, you better go into the business, you know, that type of thing. And because my first cousins who are male, who I'm the youngest, back in Dallas, are all, what's the language barrier on that we're on right now?
FCC regulations,
allegedly. Okay, all right. So the complete and utter F-ups that are my first cousins back in Dallas, who one's addicted to heroin, one's addicted to coke, one crack, one alcohol, one gambling, the list goes on and on. There's several of us. I'm the only one that's clean and is a productive member of society and ever has been. They were always viewed as hopeless from day one by our grandfather. So the sights were set on me from a very, very young age, and I was groomed for it. So it was a perfectly natural thing to do, and it was something consequently that I never questioned, even when the more daunting and douchey types, you know, became more prevalent in my surroundings. Because honestly, things didn't come to a head until I was in that position on payroll with the council. That's when the fun started.
Well, hold on a second. Does that mean that basically until you reach a certain level, you won't even get an inkling that there's something wrong?
I'll put it like this. Imagine you're the most popular girl in high school, and you think your high school is just perfect. And then suddenly you get elected homecoming queen, and everybody's got it out for you, and you cannot understand why. That's kind of the situation.
So was this just a problem for you because you were talented and you were kind of like a bit more skilled than those around you? A jealousy?
Yes, I went from my apprentice through my master's proficiency in a matter of 6 months, which is, it's not record breaking, but it's close. The record would be one day by held by Red Skelton. But it's still quick. I mean, the average guy today takes 2, 3, 4 years to do what I did in 6 months. That's because, okay, if you want to, I don't want to get sidetracked. I know we're pressed for time, but if you want to get into the subject matter of MKUltra and Monarch programming and all of that, what they call the Theta programming, which is the bloodline specific, it's heavy on the memory retention. So that logic would apply to this discussion.
Well, specifically how?
You're just always groomed to be a, shall we say, a master of the English language. That's always the emphasis of your studies in school. Any kind of extracurricular activities are always encouraged in the form of fine arts and debate and that kind of, you know, politically type thing, charged things. So that's what it's all about. It's about grooming. I mean, that's, my grandfather was famous in Texas only from a business point of view. He was a famous business mogul, you know, not a singer or an actor or whatever. But so there's different levels of fame and different levels of what you are told by your handlers that is expected of you. And depending on who you are and what you do, that varies. And so in the case of where I come from, I mean, I could not possibly give a bigger middle finger to my own family than my separation or divorce, rather, from the Masons. That's what caused the culling of communications with them. A lot of people have tried to say, oh, it's because he's gay. And they're, no, half my family's gay. That has nothing to do with nothing. The writing the book and all of that, that's what did that. So and they refused to acknowledge it. If you were to run into one of them on the street and say, oh, how's James, you know, it'd be James who, you know, that's their attitude toward it now. So
one of my good friends is a Master Mason, and I remember one time he was just telling us that the only requirement of being in the Freemasonry is, yep, you just got to believe that there's a supreme being. That's all you have to do. It's all you have to do. And I was saying to him, bro, how old is Freemasonry? Where does its roots trace back from? Isn't it like going back to the time of Solomon kind of thing and drawing its inspiration from there? You'd figure if something was drawing on such old history and has been around for so long in its current state anyway, that they would have figured out exactly which or who this higher power was that they're supposed to be worshipping or acknowledging exists.
that's a lie that I can debunk with witness testimony as well. Now, yes, you're right. They say that the one requirement is you have to be monotheistic. You have to believe in one supreme being. So what happens is all neighborhood blue lodges customarily keep a copy of the Holy Bible, the Quran, and the is it the Talmud or the Torah? Jewish people, forgive me. Anyway, you get my point. And so when you walk in and you're being brought in, you're being initiated, you're an apprentice, blah, 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 they ask you which one you are, and then they go in the back and they pull out the appropriate, okay, you're Muslim, so we're going to pull out the Quran and put that on the altar, and that's what you put your hand on and take your oath and blah, blah, blah. All right, so having said that, I witnessed guys come in who said, well, my religion is Thelema, so I want a copy of the Holy Books of Thelema by Aleister Crowley for my book on the altar, which they allowed. So that right there proves that you do not have to be monotheistic, because Aleister Crowley was famously the opposite of monotheistic. He believed in multiple. If you know what Thelema is, then you know that it's like paganism. There's this god and this goddess, and there's Osiris and Iris and Horus and all these things that you acknowledge as deity. So that right there is a bold-faced lie when they say it's monotheistic, because they themselves can't even define who they're worshiping in the higher degrees, except Albert Pike, who admitted it was Lucifer.
And that was a long time ago as well. I mean, has there any evidence recently or throughout the rest of it to say that yes, the Freemasonry is there to worship Lucifer?
Quite the contrary, because of them being sick and tired of always having to explain that and no one ever buying what they say about it. What they've done instead is they've gone in and reprinted Morals and Dogma with what they now call the abridged version, and they've deleted all that, and now they deny it exists. So you have to have one of those antique copies to prove it now.
Okay, well, in that context, I mean, would you say that they do worship Lucifer? And exactly how does one worship Lucifer in a Freemasonic lodge? How do you go about it?
Well, I guess that would hinge on whether or not you subscribe to Luciferian doctrine, which would be to eat of that forbidden fruit, to seek knowledge over faith. And I myself, I mean, I don't necessarily argue that. Now, what I will say is my butt is in church every Sunday, where 99% of the Masons I've ever met in my life anywhere on this globe are not, so much so that I'm now an usher in my church. So, you know, I walk the walk when it comes to the having faith and being a Christian and all of that. And I can't say the same for my brothers.
Well, again, how exactly do they, what are the practices involved if you're worshiping Lucifer? I mean, are they dressing up in black robes and getting around in circles, sacrificing babies or goats or something like that?
Not in the official rituals. Those are going to be your by invitation only orders, Temple of Set, oh gosh, what I mean, there's hundreds of them.
So it's the invitation only places where the dark stuff goes down, so that they can basically keep the public face of the organization clean.
Right, and you've got to be a Templar in a 32nd before you're even considered to be put in that hat to be deliberated upon of being approached to join one of those by invitation only. That's where the CIA recruits from. It's that analogy I've made a million times of you become a 32nd degree, and it's basically like walking through a door into a long hallway like from The Shining that just keeps going and keeps going and keeps going and full of more doors, you know?
All right. Well, unfortunately, James, we've run out of time here. I want to thank you very much for coming on the broadcast. Is your website still dialmformason.weebly.com?
It is, and I've recently, I don't want to give too much away prematurely, but my first book and the second one that you mentioned, The Filthy Rituals, I'm re-editing those because New Falcon butchered them on purpose. What they published was not the manuscript I submitted, and so I'm having to go back and fix all that. I've agreed, you know, to go with a new publisher who I'm very excited about. So that's yet another thing I've got in the works. Yes, my website is dialmformason.weebly.com, or you can pull me up on Facebook under James Robert Wright with a W, or my Twitter is at jdallastexas, which is at jaydallastexas, and through any of those. And I think I'm on Pinterest too, but I'm still trying to learn that one, so...
Well, that's the end of the show for today, ladies and gentlemen. Check out James's website, and thank you very much for listening. Bear in mind, it is a listener-supported broadcast, so please go to thevinnyeastwoodshow.com and make a donation today, or start up one of those $5 a month automatic payments. If you want to do more or less, that's okay too. Thank you so much. We'll see you again sometime.